You're listening to DraftKings Network.
All right, everybody, Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV, copyright 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
We will get to the normal hijinks in a second that you expect with your Sports Monday offerings. But before, Stugatz, we get into the silliness, a little dollop of colonialism and genocide. When you exterminate all the brutes is a documentary on HBO Max. I encourage you to watch by the director of I Am Not Your Negro. It's four parts. Raoul Peck did it and narrates it and talks about many things. But one of them is what weaponry was used for, what it was created for, how the history of weaponry. And I just don't want to get into our Monday of playoff fun and frolicking without mentioning in heartbreaking tone, like that the mass shooting in Buffalo, and not just Buffalo, you got California, you got Houston, these things can't become and can't be normalized no matter how much they happen. And so just a moment to reflect on that, just because you got three this weekend and they happen so often that you're just sort of like, okay, this is now where we live. This was not ever intended to be the use of these weapons, but in some ways it was. And so I encourage you to watch Exterminate All the Brutes if you want to be a little more informed about just things going on in this country as people protect the power that is used to being in power. Moving on to lighter and sillier matters, Stugatz, because the basketball and the hockey has been a great deal of fun. And I think I can say this without being knee-jerk. I've never seen what happened to Phoenix in Game 7. It's not something I have ever seen in basketball. A team spit up on itself like that,
right,
and turn the conversation today very easily. I understand how it happens, that it's Devin Booker's a star when they win. Credit to Devin Booker. And when they lose, it's Chris Paul. Chris Paul, you never win Chris Paul. So Patrick Beverley is now on Get Up, and this is what he just had to say. He said, Chris Paul can't guard anybody, man. Everyone in the NBA knows that. You know those cones in the summer that you dribble around? What does the cone do? Nothing. He's a cone. It's just that y'all don't want to accept that. Give him the Ben Simmons slander, end quote.
I mean, is he wrong in what he's saying? And Chris Paul was terrible in that series. I get what you're saying about Devin Booker. Okay, he's a superstar. He's younger. He's got to do better than he did in that Game 7. But so does Chris Paul. And that's the problem with Chris Paul. Will he praise on him when he has one of those magical games, 14 of 14? But then he does what he did last night, and it seems like everyone wants to give him a pass. And to me, That's just ridiculous. He's not one of the five greatest point guards. That's always been my objection. He's just not. I'm sorry.
But can we just pause for a second on what we saw yesterday? You play all season to have that game at home.
Yes.
That series was all whoever's at home wins by 30 points. The other team doesn't have a chance to have that lead at halftime and to never bounce back in any way to score 20. That offense, 27 points at the half.
Embarrassing.
When you said two weeks ago, Dallas doesn't have anybody. Like 2 weeks ago, and they do, Luka, the beluka whale that you want to, like, he's as good as anyone playing basketball, but that sport does not produce surprises like that, ever.
No.
Not like that. That game, if I go into that game and I say to you, Dallas wins in seven, do you expect it? You're like, well, no, but maybe at the buzzer, or maybe late in a close game. Not that. Like, that never happens in that sport. A totally predictable sport. Like, it's not random like baseball, like football, like hockey. This would have been 1-2, 1-2 in the finals. As it, like, these would have been the best teams in the finals. But if you're ever going to accuse a team of choking, have at it.
Yeah.
Because that was unbelievable to see them be that incompetent in a game that mattered at home.
They were 32-9 at home, 32-9 on the road. They're a great team. That game, that series never should have arrived at game seven, to be honest.
Dallas is really good. The second half of the season, Dallas was Boston kind of good.
I know, but it arrived at game seven. The Suns, not just Chris Paul, all of them were dreadful, but Chris Paul certainly stands out for me. The other thing
Devin
we never...
Devin Booker should too, Stugatz.
I think he's
hurt. He's got to be hurt. He's the star of that team, Stugatz.
That's convenient. Stugatz, he's hurt now.
Stugatz,
he did miss games in the previous
Stugatz,
series.
I watched that team.
Chris Paul at the end of the game looking at his hand on the bench. Like, that's like a golfer plays a bad round, stares at his equipment. I'm sorry, it's not your hand.
I'm more on your side here. He was dealing with an injury, but what happened last night wasn't about Devin Booker being hobbled. You mentioned that you've never seen that before. It's actually tied for the fourth biggest blowout in Game 7 history. However, I haven't seen that happen on the road. The Miami Heat and Hornets, remember the purple shirt guy series?
That was a Game 7 blowout. They're at home.
Yeah. I've never seen that.
The Mavericks, 64 games.
It is actually not the biggest Game 7 blowout in Mavericks history. In 2005, the Mavericks blew out the Rockets in a Game 7 by 40 points, but that was at the Dallas Mavericks home arena. I have never seen it happen on the road.
The other thing we never do, and I'm glad you brought it up, is Luka had an all-time series, and it looks like he's going to be an all-time player. I'm not certain he's 25 yet, and he had an all-time series. Well,
you have to prepare for a couple of things that have changed in basketball. One is the internationalization of all of this is going to make it so that more and more guys like this start appearing in this sport. But the other thing is, because Mike and I were talking about this before the show, it's crazy to think how young Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are, given that they've already played a slew of game sevens. Like, they've already played so many games that you have seen and remember. They haven't won a lot of them, or they haven't done the hugely memorable things that people associate with game sevens, but they're just starting their career. Like, it's weird to see Jason Tatum at around the age of 25 have like all the Celtics playoff records for anyone that age, like you eclipsing Bird and everyone else. You're going to have to start getting used to the idea that guys are going to be around. Cause Mike was talking about the idea that Ekblad is somehow younger than De'Aaron King.
Aaron Ekblad, who's played his professional hockey career in Florida.
Right.
This is now his eighth season as a Florida Panther.
Come on.
He is 6 months older than De'Aaron King.
He's a cagey vet.
You're going to have to get used to the idea that Jason Tatum is going to be here for 10 years fighting these things out, slugging it out with Giannis. Like, you get to in real time see what these things look like that they are now making Winning Time about, and Apple documentaries with Magic that pass for nostalgia. You're getting to live it right now as an exhausted Giannis is showing you something on a court statistically where you're like, how is any of that possible? And you're seeing him. He's dragging him as much as he can, but he can't. He falls to his knees at the end. He's got nothing. There's nothing left in the tank. all of the last 2 years when he recovers from a knee injury in the finals that we thought would have been the end. And Stugatz, if that had been the injury, you'd still be out here questioning whether Giannis could win or not.
I would, yes.
If that injury had befallen him, you'd still... There are so many good players right now, Stugatz, fighting for the throne, but these games kind of stink.
They do. Yeah,
you keep getting these 20 and 30 point games when you want some tension. You want Tatum to have to go after Giannis one and one top of the key. Give me something late in the game that I got to watch and be interested in.
Now that series had some great games and some great moments. It did. The Suns Mavericks series was dreadful. There was not a close game of the seven. So not God's, one.
Most of the basketball playoffs have had a lot of. I'm telling you, when you start making it these 53 games, when Boston can shoot more threes in a game than they've ever shot and make more threes in a playoff game than they ever got, and Milwaukee goes 4 of 33.
Yeah, no, you've changed my perception of that, because I didn't really know that the blowouts were a thing. And then you highlighted it, and outside of this series prior to Game 7, the Celtics-Bucks series, you're dead on. The games have not been interesting. It's a polar opposite of how the clinching games in the hockey first round
went. But all the more surprising to me, because I expected Phoenix to win by 1,000 points last night.
I think everyone
because
did.
Of everything... Yeah. Because of the way that everything went in that series, I'm telling you, I have not seen a halftime a whole lot. Charles Barkley gets paid to speak, is very good at it, has done it for 40 years. He's staring at the camera. He looked dumbfounded. Like, he looked, what the hell did I just watch? Yeah. And Mike says it's because he was counting on Western Conference Finals games near his home in Phoenix. But it was that kind of dumbfounding. If you've been watching basketball all your life, that first half in that game make no sense.
It was shocking.
I was surprised just because it was a home team at Game 7. That game was over by the second quarter. I was shocked at how that did. I thought that how that went. I thought it was going to be a really good competitive game, because I've been paying attention to the Mavericks the second half of the season. People try to dismiss the Heat and their number one overall seed, saying, hey, they were only as good as the Mavericks were in the second half of the season. I'm like, that's because the Mavericks have been really freaking good. And it's an old school. It is kind of watching how the Celtics went through Larry Bird, or how the Mavericks went through Dirk, or how the Bucks were doing their damage early on in Game 7.
Right.
The best player has to touch the ball every goddamn time you go down the court for you to have a shot. And dude was flatly unstoppable.
He always is.
His comps in the postseason, it's him and Jordan.
Yeah.
So far.
It's crazy.
When you take into consideration his age and his efficiencies, he is at the Jordan tier.
He's 23. I said, I don't think he's 25. He's not 24. But
what I'm telling you guys is, this is how it happens. Michael Jordan fell on his neck for many years at the feet of these teams. The Warriors, the Memphis Grizzlies say out loud, Dillon Brooks is saying, they're old, we're young, we're coming. And the Warriors are like, not yet. Here you go, Luka. Like, here, he hadn't won a playoff series. And now the stories start, because you're like, you go out Game 7, you just, I mean, Chris Paul, say what you will about him. He takes out in Game 7 a guy with 17 years of experience, Devin Booker, not yet. My turn. I'm going to be the one that now they talk about in this next round. Oh, these are Jordan numbers. And now we got to feed the machine in the playoffs. These are the four best teams. Now it's going to be Luka, because who else are we going to talk about on the Mavericks? You could talk about Brunson and Max contracts, but he's their star, clearly delineated, and he's coming for the things that are at the top of the sport. I think I can make the argument that the Dallas Mavericks are the worst team remaining in these playoffs, but have the best player.
Depends.
Steph Curry.
Steph.
I mean,
you still probably have to.
Tatum.
I'll tell you, if I'm starting a team right now, it's easy. I go Luka over Steph.
I'm not saying age starting a team right now because I need it to be young. Luka, I'm saying, yeah, I got a game Luka tomorrow.
Yes.
I got a game
of
tomorrow.
I will concede. Luka's the best player right now.
But Boston and Miami are all defense. Boston and Miami will make that look more difficult. But first, it's Golden State. It's the old heads who we're used to seeing around the throne.
It has to be Luka or Al Horford, right? I mean, has to be. Dan, you know,
Grant Williams,
who was great. You always wonder, like, who's next? What's going to happen next? Because LeBron's going to be out in a couple of years. And you're like, how can the league possibly replace LeBron James? But it'll be out completely.
Yeah.
And how could the league? I thought this when Jordan was coming to an end. Like, how is the league going to replace this? And they did with LeBron James. And then you start to wonder towards the end of LeBron's career, how are they going to replace this? And they are. With Luka, with Tatum, with Giannis, Booker,
Stugatz, I will
with
say,
Morant.
I wonder, future of the sport stuff, if you start stacking some things on top of each other and I don't make any of these games close and then I start internationalizing the sport more and more, where Jokic is a star, clearly, but Denver has no national reverberations as a team, even though they've got a star on it. If I keep making the guys more and more international, if I keep trying to placate customer bases that get uncomfortable with some of the social, you've seen all of that stuff kind of vanish from basketball, right? You haven't seen a whole lot of activism, and there are plenty of people who would make the argument that the activism during that time did not serve the NBA in just putting off people who were looking for a reason to be put off by the NBA. If I start making these all 30-point game sevens and not close games that don't have any of this dramatic tension, I'm putting something in front of the customer base that is vastly less interesting than hockey's playoffs.
I mean, hockey's playoffs have always been more interesting. Yes. And I was watching, even though I actually like their game presentation, maybe it's because my team's in it in the second round for the first time in 26 years, but being on ESPN matters. I think Turner has also helped elevate the NHL. I'm very curious to see what the numbers say, because the NHL went away to die for a couple of years, it felt like, when it signed that deal with Versus and then NBC. And it was just, it wasn't mattering. It wasn't covered at all by ESPN because they didn't have the rights. And now you can kind of see what a legacy media partner that is on 24 hours a day can do.
Helps so much. It really does. You had two game sevens in hockey yesterday, two game sevens in the NBA. You'll forget the game sevens in the NBA, but the game sevens in hockey were amazing. Like, the Rangers are down 3-2, end of the third period. They get a goal. They win in overtime at home. And then I think Calgary, same thing. Down 3-2 late, tie it up, and they win in overtime.
I've never heard an arena so loud
crazy
on TV as I heard Madison Square Garden nuts after that overtime win.
Yeah. An unbelievable sound. But also, like, to your point, Dan, the Rangers-Penguins game started at 7. The Mavericks-Suns game started at 8. The Mavericks-Suns game ended quicker. It was done at halftime. I could flip over to TBS and watch the end of that Rangers game
because
It was a miles better game, but a lot of this stuff always comes down to discussion points, because pure sporting drama, pure sporting theater is always, you know, it takes a backseat to storyline. And I think hockey has always gotten the storyline bit wrong, where, like, yeah, I know the Rangers and the Penguins mean something as franchises, but I honestly don't know what is the storyline between those two teams. Someone texted me, who are you rooting for? And I just said hockey.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for hockey to happen in this
and it happened all over the place.
Right. Hockey is happening everywhere.
Everywhere.
You refer to some of the players by their jersey numbers, because, like, if Dan's making the argument for Jokic and Luka to be hard for people to connect to in this country, try hockey.
Try Kuznetsov.
All I know is you don't want to see Carolina in a game seven. That's all I know. You want to see Toronto and you don't want to see Carolina. That's what I know about hockey.
I don't think anybody wants to see Tampa either. In the middle of all of this, Billy is wondering, as hockey and basketball break out, and I ask the question, please put it on the poll at Levitard Show, Billy, do you wish a little more hockey would break out during basketball? Because these basketball games need some of these overtimes. Come on, I want one of those Kevin Durant, Giannis games from last year. Give me one of these blow-by-blow games where you're scared at the end. Everyone's scared and you're just rooting. All you're rooting for is for sports to be great.
I do think we're going to get – we saw what two great defenses mean for these matchups, and you got fewer blowouts in the Boston-Milwaukee series. And I do think you're going to see that really tight games – in the Miami-Boston series are always so evenly matched. So I think that that's going to be a compelling series. And my hot take is Dallas makes for a better series against Golden State than Phoenix does. You would have had so many of those blowouts because they play that style where look at their margin of victory. When those teams have it cooking, they run teams off the court. I think Dallas makes for a more interesting opponent.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but you lose what Whitty was talking about, that storyline of Chris Paul trying to win his first title, right? That storyline's got now it's Luka. Right,
yeah,
now
we're
it's
here Luka. For yeah. A European Jordan.
Yeah.
In the middle of this, though, Billy is watching Reds Pirates.
Oh, Reds Pirates. You see what happened yesterday? There is too many game sevens, okay? Like, enough with the. There was like seven game sevens this
weekend. Getting watered down.
Just too many game sevens. Also, like, we don't need 4 days off between every game. That's, you know, for another day, but basketball in particular, okay? I wish Tony was here. Real hoopers know. You can play four basketball games back to back to back at the park. You know
You've
what I mean?
You've been playing like, every other day, Billy. This year. But it feels like schedule.
Four. Yeah, it feels like
you
four.
You can play three or four pickup games in a day in basketball. We don't need to be taking 4 days off in between and travel days. Don't get me started.
Little day-night doubleheader? Is that what you're thinking?
Wow.
How about that?
Yep. I was trying to get you started on Reds Pirates.
Yeah, no, we're we're not getting to the other stuff I was telling you. Reds Pirates, see what happened yesterday, Dan? Did you see what happened?
I did.
There was a no-hitter. And the team lost that pitched the no-hitter. Do you think they celebrate that?
They should. I mean.
Should they?
Yeah.
I think so, too, right? Because you celebrate all these no-hitters. It's like a big accomplishment. That's just the Reds. I mean, the Reds are so bad.
They're 9-26.
They pitched a no-hitter, and they lost the game.
To the Pirates.
To the Pirates. Lewis is looking at me, and he's saying, how? Good question, Lewis. This is what happened. Walk. 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 Fielder's choice. And that was the bottom of the eighth inning. Then the Buccos came up. Boom. Got out the Redbirds. No, not the Redbirds. The Red Legs.
The Reds.
Mm-hmm. No, the Red Legs is...
Red Stockings.
No, the guy is Red Legs. Their mascot. We're getting caught up here. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
So they lose the game. The Red Sox are in Boston.
Yeah, Red Sox. Yeah.
No, they didn't throw a nine-inning no-hitter, right? Because they were the road team?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It was more than one pitcher, too, so that's a whole other story that we can get to another day, too. We don't need to talk about combined no-hitters versus regular no-hitters.
You did have a guy throw 114 pitches. I mean, it's a lot of pitches.
You think they should have gone in the clubhouse and celebrated on the field?
No. Like the team will always like sell like the ticket stub of the no hitter. There'll be like a bobblehead to commemorate the no hitter or whatever, you know, like years down the road. But this feels like a forgotten no hitter in the history of the Reds, right? Wouldn't you think?
It's hard to lose a no hitter. And there haven't been many throughout history. That
I think
have
there's been
lost.
Six or seven teams that have done it. But which is a lot more than
But I want to talk more about how you have this happening because I'm with you. There's very little that has been devalued more in sports than in general the no-hitter. We used to break into programming. If someone had a no-hitter in the eighth or ninth inning.
Well, like, but that's because now each team plays 27 pitchers and they only need to get one out each. You know what I mean? So it's not that hard.
And baseball doesn't matter that way anymore, any of it. But you want what to happen. So you've got the Reds. The Reds have
very
the Pirates score one run in the bottom of the eighth, and now the Pirates lead 1-0 headed to the top of the ninth.
Having gotten no hits. Yeah.
And now they need only three outs to get so the last batter makes an out, and now you have the Reds flooding the field from the dugout to celebrate with their pitcher.
Well, no, the team that got no hit that didn't get a hit is celebrating on the field after getting no hit.
What's more impressive, losing the game while giving up no hits or winning that game? I think the more impressive feat was what Cincinnati did.
I want to get to I want to know how you have this physically being celebrated on the court, in the clubhouse, on the field, I should say. Like, how do you have, what do you have happening?
The pitchers need to buy the catcher something, right? And they need to buy like gifts for the defenders that made the good plays, correct? But
do you have the bullpen spilling out onto the field to surround the pitcher?
Do you have a public celebration or you just want a thank you, a private thank
you? No, I'm trying to... I was more kind of wondering what the Reds would do down the road because, you know, this past weekend down here in Miami, I don't know how many people are aware of this, probably not many because it was more of a local thing. They celebrated the 25th anniversary of the Marlins winning the World Series in 1997.
I wanted to talk to you about that, the 1997 Marlins.
Let's talk, man. Let's do it.
Well, I saw Antonio Alfonseca in the stands wearing his actual jersey, and I'm like, okay,
and
that's...
And pants, full uniform, and he was dancing, putting on a show.
From 97.
Maybe that'll come up in Funniest Thing, who
but
knows.
But you're wearing Alfonseca? You're wearing your jersey so that everyone knows you're a 97 Marlin who had six fingers on each hand.
How else would they know? I mean...
Oh, everybody knows El Pulpo. He's a legend down here. Get out of town.
Mike, do you have the musical rights to El Pulpo?
John Cangelosi, I can understand.
Cangie.
I did enjoy the 97 World Series celebration.
Yeah.
I even watched a pregame softball game.
Oh, were you watching that?
Yeah, there was a guy that looked just like Dan. And you know what it was? It was the shoes.
Yeah.
It was the shoes that made me think it might have been Dan because it would have made sense that Dan would be hanging around with all of his old 97 Marlins friends because he covered that team.
I believe those were sponsors that were playing. I think that's what they said at some point during the broadcast. Who, by the way, the sponsors that were playing, very look at me, Louis, on all of them. One of them diving, doing these whole things, trying to hit the ball super far, like trying to show up the world champion Florida Marlins from 1997.
Like if you're in the outfield during like a celebrity soft, like I would go for a diving snag in right center field.
Let's have one moment where Gary Sheffield kind of flirted with the notion of hitting the entire softball game, and then he finally gave the crowd what they wanted
in sandals, slides,
the bag,
no socks,
the bat wiggle, and everything. Got a hit. Someone else ran for him.
Yeah. But he had a golf injury. He told us. That's why he wasn't playing originally, golf injury. You know what I mean? It was a real Kirk Gibson moment, I would say. Wouldn't you?
What were the highlights of the 97 Marlins reunion?
Oh, Jim Leland was talking about the state of current pitching. We have that sound if you want to get to it. Dan, if I were to tell you, guess how Jim Leland feels about the way pitchers are used today. How do you think he feels about that?
I'm guessing that he doesn't like it very much.
I know the day-to-day grind may not be for you right now to manage again, but just the brand of baseball that we're seeing right now, shifts and three true outcomes with the homers and the walks and the strikeouts, is that something that Jim Leland could get behind as a manager?
Well, I could do whatever I had to do. I would make whatever adjustment I had to make. But I'm not necessarily thinking the game is better now. I don't think it is. I love the long ball like everybody does, but too many strikeouts, too many walks, too many pitches being thrown, not enough starting pitchers going deep into games. Pitchers are supposed to pitch, and your best bullpen is a seven-inning starter. Don't ever believe anything else. I mean, because you can rest your bullpen, you can pitch them when you want to. If you're using your bullpen because you want to and not because you have to, then you got something going. If you're using it because you have to all the time, it's no good. I believe pitchers are supposed to pitch. They got on me in Detroit. They said, you're pitching Scherzer and Verlander too much. Well, Scherzer's making $43 million this year at 39, and Verlander's making $50 million for 2 years. They're still pitching. Pitchers are supposed to pitch. Oh,
man. That is
knows baseball.
Courtesy Bally Sports Florida.
He dropped the bonafides.
Bonafides.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned Scherzer, who had a great moment. I don't know if you saw this week. And
somebody... What an asshole. Sorry.
What's the matter with him? I mean.
Displaying the behavior of an asshole.
You guys, did you see what he did?
Nah.
Someone was supposed to throw out the ceremonial first pitch, and Scherzer decided to race him to the mound and just start warming up. So they then took the person off the field and didn't let the person throw the ceremonial first pitch.
I love that.
No, please.
Intensity.
Get out of here.
That's what he's all about, Scherzer. He's my Scherzer now.
Him and Sale too much.
Sale hasn't pitched in years.
Remember when Chris Sale decided he wanted to cut up uniforms because he didn't like what they looked like, and then they had to change what uniforms they wore that day? Yeah. It's too much. It's too much.
Scherzer, for those who do not know.
Less intensity, Scherzer, okay? I mean, you're in the twilight of your career. I don't want to be the one to tell you, but, you know, you're on the Mets now, okay? Let's just, like, calm down. Let's just kind of slowly make our way into retirement. Let's not hurt ourselves so we can, you know, play and do all those things that you want to do with your grandkids down the road and not injure your arm. Just take it down a couple notches.
What was so offensive to you? I did not know that he sprinted out to beat the honorary first pitch thrower. I thought he was warming up. The first pitch thrower came out and he was in the zone of whatever intimidating place he has to get to mentally. And so he was, they basically shooed off the honorary first pitch thrower.
It's not his first game. He knows how it goes. National anthem, first pitch, all that stuff. You know, the pomp and circumstance to go with like a Saturday start, whatever it was, right? Just let the person throw their first pitch. This is going to be like the most exciting moment for that person for like their weekend, if not for years to come. Let them throw out the first pitch. They'll probably bounce it, whatever. It'll take 2 seconds. Whatever warm-up pitches happen between then and when the game starts are not going to make a difference for Scherzer. And he's going to draw his pitches in, and the game's going to start maybe like a minute later. What's the big deal, Max?
If the currency of the time is fame, why not have the viral moment? You get more famous from Max Scherzer shooing you away than you do throwing out another first pitch at just another ball game, right? Like people are talking about.
So
this,
he did him a favor.
No, I'm just asking if what you want is the bump in fame. What do you want? Just to throw the pitch accurately, or just the bump in fame that comes from being at the center of the spectacle?
What bump in fame? Who knows who that person even is? You just throw the first pitch. You think they're going to ask? They should invite that person back to do it again. I'm inviting that person here to throw out a first pitch before a show one day. I'm not paying for it, but person, if you're listening, you can come. You can throw out a ceremonial first pitch before we do a show one day. How about that?
Mm.
What a heartwarming invitation, Billy.
That's from the bottom of my heart.
Right in the alley back there near the mattress that's by the dumpster, you're going to have him throw out the first pitch? All right,
excellent. We can put down the hall or by the bathroom with the mirrors.
Did you see that, Whittingham? There was a mattress
Why
back
was there.
There
a mattress
I don't know.
There?
I don't, I had so many questions. All sorts of huh is right.
Mm-hmm.
There was a mattress in the alley. I don't know why, but there are any number of things. I want to start a new feature that is in South Florida. Just
how did this get here? So much jizz on it. I'm just gross. Saying it was
what?
It was so much, just covered in jizz,
or sauces of some kind.
No, I know jizz when I see it. Put it on the pole.
Wow. You
know,
yeah, I took a picture of it. It's so foul, so disgusting. I had to take a picture of it just to...
I thought like an amber hue to it. It's
I believe
strange.
That somebody is trying to get us to move. Jizz. I believe people are planting things around us, trying to physically get us to repel us, to move out of this area.
Joe Lewis.
Hold on a sec. I lost it. Hold on a sec. Here you go.
Yeah, it's pee-pee juice.
No, it's jizz.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like every mattress at every hotel looks like that, right? Just underneath sheets. You just don't know. Yes. And if it doesn't look like that, just flip it over and it looks like that. Just,
you think brown stains? You think most hotels have mattresses?
You have no idea what's under those sheets, Dan. Mm-hmm. No idea.
And I don't want to either. You know what I mean? Out of sight, out of mind.
It gives you the comfort of staying in a hotel room and feel like, this is a clean bed. I look forward to my clean bed at the end of a long day in Orlando. And yet, God knows what's under there.
You guys are of the belief that if I stay in any hotel, it looks like the mattress that Stugatz just showed me on his phone, which had...
Maybe not that one.
It looked like a map of Lake Okeechobee in terms of what the staining of it was.
That one
was.
Had so much DNA on it that I'm surprised it didn't reanimate.
Hold on. That one's been out in the rain and stuff for days, though.
Correct.
You know, like that one's gotten the elements.
I'm not certain if
somebody,
it's still there.
Somebody got rid of it this weekend. I'd been saying hello to it for a week. Hello, sad mattress.
After it started growing teeth.
All right, everybody, Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes, to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Hey, listeners, it's Mike Ryan, and I've changed a lot over the course of 20 years that you've known me. I've gone from unlikable to, well, my hair has changed. But my point is, while a lot's changed over our relationship, there's one thing that hasn't changed one bit. And that's a great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So what's the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite has sparked this debate way back in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. They keep it simple. It's got undebatable quality, great taste, 96 calories, you know all those things. It's a beer that strips everything away that you don't need and holds on to what matters most. But with Miller Lite, you don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. It's both those things. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Libertard.
And finally, Fruit Loops are all the same flavor, just different colors. I refuse to believe that.
Is that right?
I refuse to believe it. I mean, try the grapefruit loop and tell me that doesn't taste different than the cherry one, because it does. I love Fruit Loops.
Stugatz.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Did you know that all of Fruit Loops were the same flavor, just different colors?
Refuse to believe it.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Stugatz, yesterday I wanted to talk to you guys about something that has become a running joke. And if you want really insightful and good coverage of it, I encourage you to listen to Basketball Illuminati, because they do a better job covering some of the stuff going on in basketball than most people doing it. But again yesterday, as happened a couple of times during this postseason, the NBA referee Scott Foster was trending because a lot of people were making Scott Foster jokes.
And as we run off Ridley in football to overpunish him because gambling is coming and it's normalized, but we can't have it anywhere near our games, can't have it too close, we're going to punish Calvin Ridley for a year for doing something that everyone says, well, that's pretty harmless. No, it's not. We're going to be tough on gambling. Basketball plays these important games all the time with the name of a referee trending that has a huge credibility problem and is, at best, hugely biased, at worst, contaminated and corrupt. This is a guy who was linked to Donaghy. They told us that was a lone operative. That may have been a lone operative, but man, it was convenient to file it as a lone operative. And here's this other guy, Scott Foster, where Harden's like 1-13 against him and Chris Paul is 0-14. And the only win that Harden's got over him is the one over Chris Paul. And I just ask you, is this a joke? Like, are we just going to joke with the name Scott Foster? Because my guess is you're going to cluck with a good deal of outrage if you find out something. If you know that one of these results in one of these close games was contaminated by somebody that we all sort of wink-wink and are like, hey, is this guy for real? Is this a real thing? Like, isn't that a problem? He disappeared for non-COVID-related illness after game two in one of the series. But when I have someone who's linked in phone calls to Donaghy, the disgraced referee, does the audience care at all?
I mean, the audience will care once it's a bigger story, once something is proven. I understand what you're saying. There's a lot of evidence that would suggest.
No. I don't know that there. No, if there is evidence to suggest anything, he would not.
134 phone calls between Scott Foster and Tim Donaghy, but I don't know.
We don't know what those calls were. Right.
Well, I don't
phone
know.
Tag,
I think
maybe.
I don't know what's normal. What's a normal amount? That doesn't seem, by 2022 standards, that seems like a lot of phone calls because we text nowadays. But back then, if you're on the road and you're a part of a referee crew, that might be normal.
But the thing that I'm asking you guys is inevitably one of these games is going to be close, and you cannot have questions about the integrity of the result or the integrity of the objective judges that you're paying to be both objective and in charge of the judgment. And I think Scott Foster is laughably looked at with a wink-wink on like, hey, this guy might be. But what do I have to do to present a level of concern to you? Do I have to cost your team a game? Do I have to have a call?
You have to cost your team a game and prove that it was Scott Foster's fault.
Yeah. And there's a Chris Mannix story that says it's 304 phone calls from December 2006 to April 2007. I also have to look it up, but I think that there's like a godson relation between the two of them.
Can you have this around your sport is what I'm saying.
It's always been around the sport, though, hasn't it? It feels like it's been around the sport for a while now.
What you don't have around the sport is a disgraced NBA official linked to this guy, and this guy's name is the one. This is the one that everyone looks at and is like, this name, I'm not sure how pure this is. Angel Hernandez is incompetent in baseball. He is not associated or near, might alter the result of this game with his biases. It's better to do it with your incompetence, Stugatz, than to alter the game with your incompetence than with your integrity or your lack of objectivity or your biases.
Tim Donaghy is the godfather to one of Scott Foster's three children.
But wouldn't Scott Foster continuing to get high-profile assignments almost suggests that he is very competent, that in the grading system that the NBA uses for their referees, that even despite this optics problem that they have, which is that there are certain statistical gambling oddities,
which the NBA knows about, by the way.
Right, of course they do, with a few of the league's biggest stars. And yet he can, like, I feel like every big playoff game has Scott Foster in charge of it. I guarantee you he'll referee at least one game in the NBA Finals. It's strange that he continues to get these assignments despite the optics problem, which to me would suggest that based off of whatever grading system they have, he's probably a really good official. It's just that the NBA has always had these celebrity officials that become characters for whatever reason. It was Joey Crawford, Dick Bavetta. These guys are, Tony Brothers as well, where it's just like these guys that you just know for, they're on every big game. The commentators say their name. You recognize their face. You recognize their histrionics, and they become celebrities in a weird way.
Yeah. Soccer has that.
Yeah.
Only soccer has it to the level that the NBA does. The NFL is so massive, and even that sport's officials aren't as famous as NBA officials.
You love a good grading system, don't you?
I do.
I know.
I wish I was in charge of that rubric. I wish I could determine the rubric. I wish I knew what the rubric was.
How do you feel about curves in the grading system?
Not for me.
Nah.
You get what you deserve on a test.
Stugatz, Patrick Beverley continues on Get Up. They are riding him into the sun. He just continues.
I've seen good reviews for him.
Well, he's just scorching.
They took their first commercial in 45 minutes. Well, I mean, he is going bananas right now.
He's killing Chris Paul. Yes. Do I go to bed at 10 p.m. the night before playing Chris Paul? Hell no. But if I'm playing Steph Curry tomorrow, I'm going to bed at 8 o'clock, telling my girl not to call me. He says the Suns should have benched Chris Paul instead of DeAndre Ayton. They benched the wrong person. They should have benched Chris.
That's my guy. I mean, finally, someone sees it the way I do.
The Ayton thing was weird for Monty to come out after the game and say that it was something internal. That's why he only played, 17 minutes?
The whole thing was weird, Mike. All of it. The game was over after a quarter.
That's the biggest home court blowout Game 7 history.
Ayton, Booker, and Paul were a combined 1 of 15 at halftime. It's astounding. The Booker part of it in particular for me, yes. Because it's billed as Booker versus Booker.
But that's hurt. He's got to be hurt, right? Like, he's got to
They're two different players. I think, Booker flatly cannot do the things that Luka does. He's total complete offense.
No, but I don't think you watch this. This was not the playoffs happening to Devin Booker. I don't think you've been watching. That team was overwhelming this year. Like, it was not asinine or absurd to say Devin Booker was in an MVP conversation. He'd have to get anyone's consideration, top 5, 6, or 7 guys, and 3 for 14, get out of here. Like, good. That's not how he plays. He's faster than everybody.
It's not sexy because Luka isn't this great defender, but the Mavericks defense was also really good. Yep. I don't really have an explanation for why that game went the way that it did. I knew Dallas was good headed into it. I liked their chances headed into it. That was like a spaceship landing on the court.
Booker was 9 of 31 last two games. So, but why does he get the benefit of injury? Devin Booker's not good, so he's injured?
No, he was out, though.
He came back. He scored 28 points in game 5. Like, he was great in that game.
But, Stugatz, people coming back and being diminished, you say 28 points. That was Devin Booker's average game this season. Like,
But Dan, it was a blowout. They won by 30 points. He was 11 of 20. He had 28 points. He had 35 the day before.
Luka's also banged up. He missed games in the previous series. Injury, when they're out there on the court, I hate the injury narrative around series. And that's not just the Heat fan bias because he can't get credit because they beat a team with a hobbled Joel Embiid. Everybody is hurt.
Understood, but when you're being met with a result that doesn't have a precedent in the history of sports, losing game 7 at home that way, and those numbers are out there on a team that I'm telling you, go look at their point differential this season. Overwhelmingly good basketball team when it was healthy. Not okay, beating everybody in a way that was more consistent than anyone in the sport.
Even when they were unhealthy, they were really good.
Overwhelming offensively. To have that team have 27 points at the end of the first half, where what'd they score in the second period? Did they score 5 points in the second period? Like, they couldn't do anything offensively. We can sit here and try and deconstruct it, but if you're going to say... If we're going to do these conversations about the hierarchy of bus drivers, the bus driver on that team is Devin Booker. The star of that team is Devin Booker. And we can crush Chris Paul all you want today.
We should crush Chris Paul. Dan, if they won the championship, the story would be Chris Paul, not Devin Booker. Chris Paul was dreadful, not just in Game 7, the entire series.
Agreed.
After Game 2, he was terrible.
Agreed.
I don't know what happened. Well, I do know what happened. Chris Paul happened. But he was bad after Game 2.
I don't expect too much. Look, you are right to place a high standard on a guy who's one of the great point guards of all time, but he's 37 years old. And when Patrick Beverley is talking about defense, I don't expect Chris Paul to stop anybody, and I don't expect Chris Paul to be able to put up consistent 14 for 14s or 12 for 18s. There are going to be stinkers in there, and he was bad in that series, but I never thought of that as Chris Paul's team. And maybe Chris Paul's story.
Well, that's convenient because when he goes 14 of 14, it's Chris Paul's team. And he's taught Devin Booker everything. And when he doesn't do that, he's injured.
I don't know, something's wrong. I don't know that Chris Paul taught Devin Booker anything. Chris Paul arrived and made the team a little bit better because they needed a second good player who is, again, 37 years old. These are the times that these stories get told. Phoenix, these windows are very small, Stugatz. I don't know what Phoenix is going to do now with Ayton. They've got to pay him.
But Dan, before he got there, they were 34-39 with Devin Booker. Then Chris Paul got there, and then they had the two seasons that they've had the last two seasons, and it's resulted in nothing.
But you have to allow for the growth of Devin Booker in there as well. It's not just that they added
Ayton, I guess.
It's not just that they added Chris Paul. Ayton's still under 25, isn't he? Even though he looks 54 years old.
they picked Ayton number one over Luka, same draft class.
Them and the Kings are regretting that when the Kings took Bagley and then Atlanta trading down to get Trae Young and stuff. At least Trae Young and stuff has turned into a conference finals appearance, but those other two teams, woof.
It's always been explained to me why Sarver went with Ayton number one, the Arizona ties, the relationship with the agent. They had the Slovenian national coach at the time as their head coach. They had him on the roster.
No, that was funny.
It didn't make any sense to me.
I thought it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to end up there. I thought everybody was predicting that
Ayton stuff was just smoke. And then Luka went, then Sacramento came up on the clock. And I'm like, surely the best player in this draft will be drafted here. Nope. And then the Trae Young trade happened. If you watch international basketball, if you watch Real Madrid play basketball, he was destined to be great. I don't understand how someone, knowing where the NBA was going and knowing that you watch international basketball enough to hire the Slovenian national team coach, I don't know how you pass up on Luka.
Well, why wouldn't you, though, this is a version of the same sort of conversation that we had with Jay Billis about Tyler Hansborough and Michael Beasley. If given the certainties and a thing that's not subjective of basketball player that you think is going to succeed at basketball, visually just looking at them. I put Ayton next to you, and I put Doncic next to you.
Mm-hmm. I take Bagley.
Yeah, Bagley. That was just the Kings that happened, right?
Yes.
Luka is putting up point totals that are Michael Jordan-ish. Was it 35?
What is he averaging?
It was 35 points in 30 minutes yesterday.
In his playoff career, he is averaging 33 points per game in 26 playoff games across three seasons. That's even including the series in which they lost.
There's only one house on that block, and now there's two.
Yeah. In that series, though, Dan, it's incredible. Like, a seven-game series for a guy to go for 33, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. Like, just and beat the one seed on the road by a billion points. I mean,
and kind of called his own number earlier this season because they traded Kristaps Porzingis, and it would seem pretty clear that it's just get anything big out of my way, I'll do with Dinwiddie and Bertans, and he has done with Dinwiddie and Bertans
and Brunson.
Brunson's right, I mean, okay. Brunson was already there, but they got Dinwiddie and Bertans from Washington.
But Dan said the storyline will be Luka. The other storyline for that team will be Jason Kidd. Like, first-year head coach, getting along with Luka, getting the most out of Luka. Whether he is or not, that will be part of the storyline.
Coach of the year in the NBA got out-coached by Jason Kidd, who was a punchline. And because he has this result and a very convincing Wired for Sound, where he was very much coaching them up.
Yes.
He appears to have improved as a head coach.
Well, here also, to say it. We will. Well, it's easy to say when
he was yelling,
trap him, come on. And I was like, wow, coaching.
Remember that Coke stunt when he was out of timeouts?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
How could I forget?
Yeah. He's always been a good coach.
That's what you associate with good coaching.
That is good coaching. Is it not good coaching?
Distraction.
He didn't have timeouts and he pulled one out of his, you know, took us.
Exactly.
He did pull one out of what was the fine for that? For purposely spilling a soda on the
purposely.
Court?
It's, that was an accident.
What are you talking about?
It was great acting. It was.
Was he fine for that?
$50,000.
Really?
That's usually what a soda costs in New York City.
I would say he wasn't fined $50,000. I'd say that day he not only did a great coaching job, but he also raised $50,000 for charity.
Mm-hmm. What a guy.
All right, everybody, Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes, to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Hey, listeners, it's Mike Ryan, and I've changed a lot over the course of 20 years that you've known me. I've gone from unlikable to, well, my hair has changed. But my point is, while a lot's changed over our relationship, there's one thing that hasn't changed one bit, and that's a great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So what's the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite has sparked this debate way back in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. They keep it simple. It's got undebatable quality, great taste, 96 calories, you know all those things. It's a beer that strips everything away that you don't need and holds on to what matters most. But with Miller Lite, you don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. It's both those things. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.